like to just briefly continue where we left off and then open the forum for further questions. There is a verse, an often quoted verse, where the devotee asked the Lord to make his love for him as spontaneous as that of young boys who feel spontaneously attracted to young girls, and vice versa. The devotee prays, let my love become as spontaneous as that of young girls who see an attractive and kind-hearted boy and feel natural, spontaneous attraction in their hearts. Bhakti, in other words, or now where we speak like this, the heart of bhakti, the devotion which needs to be added, is natural. The Living Name, I tell the story of the man, of the yogi who sat in the forest meditating when it was night, and the jungle or the forest was silent. There was no one around. And all of a sudden, he heard steps coming in his direction. So it's quite scary when you are in the night in the forest and you hear footfall chum, 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 coming towards you. So a little later he sees a lady coming out of the darkness. It's full moon by now. The lady is running towards him, hits him on the shoulder so that he falls over and then disappears with loud noise in the opposite direction. Who was that? Says the yogi, and he just dusts himself off and continues with his night sadhana. Then a little later, there's again footfall coming, this time from the opposite direction. It must be the same person who returns. And yes, he sees that the lady of the forest coming towards him, seeing him and paying her most respectful obeisances. So the yogi says, hey, wait a minute, I can't take your obeisances serious. You kicked me over only in 2 hours or 3 hours ago. Can you please explain your contradictory behavior? And she says, oh, I was on my way to my lover. There was a cottage near the river. We had made our appointment, and I had not seen him for a whole year, so I came. And I did not have eyes for anything and anyone else, but now the meeting is completed, and I'm on my way back home. I'm seeing now the world again. So the yogi thanks her for her explanation, and she continues on, and he is left thinking, yes, this little girl, or this girl, young girl, immature girl, was just seeing an ordinary human being. It was so absorbed that everything else disappeared in the background. But I am chanting the names of God. But I'm not at all absorbed. I should be more absorbed than hundreds of these greenhorn ladies. I mean, this young ladies. But I'm not. I better change something in my approach. And this is a little bit what I wanted to explain. I think when we as Pandava Senas come into this mood of thinking more for Krishna, what we can do for Krishna, and not just get captured by the external aspects of our activities, which will sometimes please us very much, they're successful, and sometimes they will bite us in our heart so that we are very disappointed because it did not work the way we wanted. We need to come to the platform where we do things for Krishna, then success or failure, it's the same thing, because we are focused on Krishna, we are with Krishna, then our bhakti is stable. So this, how will we come to this level? Well, one recommendation which is always stated throughout the scriptures is you must approach devotees and hear from them about Krishna consciousness. Then Krishna becomes very, very real, and you then begin to think spontaneously, like a young boy or a young girl thinks of the opposite sex in a spontaneous way, the opposite gender, I think we say. You will think in a spontaneous way about Krishna. Another thing is this very, very nice verse from the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. I want to find it for you. Here it's just the verse, but I think Sunil will give us very soon the place where it is. It seemed to not show up here. I mean, the verse is there, but not the number. Ah, here it is. 11th canto, chapter 2, verse 36. Let me see. Yes. This is a verse which will bring you into the bhakti mood. It's a very, very practical verse. Can I recite it for you?
Yes.
Kayena vacha manasendiyerva. Kayena vacha manasendiyerva. Budyat manavanushita svabhavat karoti yadyat sakalam parasmai narayana yeti samapayami. It says, whatever is your particular nature that you have acquired in conditioned soul, offer your body, your words, your mind, your senses, your intelligence, and your purified consciousness to the Supreme and think, this is for the pleasure of Lord Narayan. This is for you. My dear devotees, it's magical. If you start here, you will activate a caravan of resources. In a moment I will explain what that caravan is. But if you enter with this idea, I have a certain nature here. I can speak something, I can think something, I can do something with my senses and with my intelligence. I will do this for the pleasure of the Lord. I will offer it. Narayana yeti samapayami. This is for you, my Lord. Then you will enter the kingdom of bhakti. Krishna waits for this. Krishna waits that we turn for him, to him. And he is even satisfied with the most homeopathic doses of bhakti. I spoke a little earlier of the caravan of resources. When you start with somewhere and with bhakti, with the devotion, an emotion, a feeling. It's for Krishna, for you. It will pull after it many other feelings. It's like, you know, when a caravan is there, you just need to take the leading camel and you grab the ropes which are there hanging from the mouth, and then pull the leading camel in whatever way you wish it to go, let us say the right direction. I mean, it's a direction not correct or incorrect. You want to draw it right. Then, as you do it, the next camel will follow. Then the next camel will follow. Then the next camel will follow. Then the next camel will follow. This is the power of activities in the mode of goodness and activities in the mode of pure goodness or bhakti. When you start somewhere, that somewhere will pull other things behind it. Start with this verse, for instance. 11, what was it? I've lost the verse already. 11 to 36. Learn it by heart and say in the evening, whatever I have offered, done today, it's for your pleasure. And by this, everything will go in the right direction. There are many proofs how Krishna cares for the smallest and smallest and smallest of things. I always like to tell the devotees about Krishna's Kaliya Damana Leela. Do you remember? Kaliya had entered the Yamuna and created a space where he lived. It was a monstrous snake, much bigger than your Nessie in Scotland. You have seen Nessie? And we as children were totally fans of Nessie, so that's how I found England on the map, under Nessie, under Scotland. It's a huge snake, apparently, in a lake in Scotland. Some say she's not there, others have photos, so whatever. Kaliya was there, and Krishna entered that lake, which was created by Kaliya, in the river and in Yamuna. And when Kaliya saw Krishna swimming towards him, he pounced on Krishna and wrapped him in his deadly coils. And he held Krishna there for 48 minutes, two praharas. And so Sanatana Goswami says what Krishna felt. Krishna thought, if someone likes a person a little bit, he will embrace him a little bit for some short time. If that person likes the other person more, then the embrace will be longer. Kaliya is already embracing me for 48 minutes. It means he must like me very much. And he decided then to give his mercy to Kaliya by dancing on his hoods and taking the poison out of his mind. So this is Krishna. When he sees someone approaching, even as if he is a devotee, you know, with that little, fine, little something of the Bhava Rupa Bhakti, that mood. It was really only, you know, it was an embrace. So Krishna said, let me take this embrace. It was meant to be a deadly embrace, but I crossed the deadly out, and I think only of the embrace. So Krishna is so kind. I find this very encouraging. You might have heard that Putana, the evil demoness who was killing children by sucking their blood, approached Krishna dressed like a devotee, as if she was her mother. She bared her breast so that offering her milk together with the poison she had smeared on it to Krishna. But Krishna, again, only was interested in this little motherly thing. In Goloka Dhamma, I read a quotation which shows how Krishna and also the devotees like to see your bhava, your devotion, your affection. There was once a theater play. I think at that time our theater plays were very basic, and Prabhupada saw it. There was no stage, the lines were whatever they were, but Prabhupada said, there was no nice stage, but the feelings have come out very successful. We want to understand the feelings. Externally, we may not be very much equipped, but Krishna takes the feelings. Bhava Grahi Janarana. So, my dear devotees, this is what I wanted to explain this morning. And I wanted to say that where is the next level in your bhakti, so that you remain totally inspired, encouraged, and you offer Krishna what he really wants to have. Your love, or that's a high word, that's a high quality, your affection, your devotion, your admiration, oh Krishna, you're wonderful, your gratitude, whatever you can offer, start there. I wanted to now open the forum for any possible questions, because there was not so much time for questions. Please ask your questions. Let me see whom, if I saw someone. Vinay, I think I saw you last time. Yes. I made a mistake. Braj, super, excellent. What was the name? Vrajananda. See, almost I got it. Yes, Vrajananda Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Yes, Hare Krishna.
Yesterday you spoke about when you service, the divine energy kicks in.
Mm-hmm.
I use these words, it kicks in. So sometimes when we're doing service, we do realize, like, this is not me, something's external is coming in.
Mm-hmm.
But we realize only afterwards, in hindsight, when we see what's happened, we realize that there was some other force or energy that couldn't have worked without. So why is it that you kind of have these bursts of inspiration, and then it seems to, like, go, and then you have this, like, burst of energy, and it seems to go? It's like a kind of a car jolting, or it doesn't seem smooth.
Mm-hmm. Is your question, why do we revert or come back to the normal situation?
Is that? Yes, why do we come back to this normal energy?
Yeah. I believe the reason is because we cannot yet handle it wisely. And therefore Krishna only shows us what is possible, but then takes it back again to increase our yearning, our longing. And then we see, then we are really overwhelmed with feelings of humility, which, oh, I can't do anything alone, oh my God, I'm see now how helpless and powerless I am on my own. And these feelings of humility give rise for genuine bhakti. You must know we are in the process of Vajananda. We are still in the process. There's a very nice analogy which I heard from one devotee while I was in Vrindavan. Krishna is like someone who gives a treasured. Now Krishna gives us in the hands of Bhakti Devi, who gradually transforms us and makes us into something he would like. He's like someone who has a precious piece of gold, which is unfortunately a little deformed, a little out of shape. So he gives that customer gives that piece of gold to a goldsmith. And the goldsmith works. He says, "Come back after 7 days. Then your piece of gold is ready." So Bhakti Devi is also like this. We are given in the hands of Bhakti Devi, and she transforms us. She builds us. But Krishna sometimes is impatient, like a customer who wants to see what happened with his piece of gold. So then Bhakti Devi says, "I need some more time here with that person." Like the goldsmith may say, "I told you after 7 days you can come, but now only 2 days have been completed. You come after 5 days." So Krishna is very impatient to have all of us back. Prabhupada said, more impatient he is, or more desirous than even us. But he knows that Bhakti Devi needs to make us into an ornament he can constantly wear. So that's the process. And yes, the process unfortunately doesn't go without showing you this is possible, but then also showing you what is when you are lacking Krishna consciousness, when you are devoid, when you are empty, when you're in the zero point, and because then you become genuinely humble. yeah, Krishna. But there is a stage, Rajananda, from which you will not fall back. It's called Nishta, from Nishta, or firm fixedness onwards, that will come. Now it's sometimes a roller coaster, and your stomach is churning. It's so wild. Sometimes you are a saint, and the next day you are almost a sinner. And, not fully, but almost. Hare Krishna. Then one day you will see, "My Lord, only with your help I can do it." Mm-hmm. Sunil? Here the poetic brothers are in the creative factory.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I had a question from yesterday's story about Vallabha that you spoke about. And you shared how Vallabha's mood at one point became despondent in terms of his preaching and his ability to transform the lives of the individuals. So I was thinking about this point that sometimes some devotees, we experience this, and you said many devotees, many times we reflect, we do feel like this. Are we able to transform individuals? So my question is, this attitude is healthy, but we also have to overcome this attitude to be able to preach. So how do you personally like maintain this mood, but yet overcome this mood
or
this attitude to then preach?
Yeah. I do remember that there were times when Srila Prabhupada was expressing that things like, "Krishna didn't send me any first class disciples," he said about the devotees. you Americans are only interested in quarreling and in in sense gratification. He mentioned a particular form of sense gratification. At other times, Prabhupada was really praising you, all pure devotees. Prabhupada seemed to also, during his preaching, at least it appeared like this, sometimes lose his patience with us. And Hari Sori knows that there was a phase in Prabhupada where he was really angry. That was when his lower lip was trembling. That meant just before the volcano exploded. We knew this as his disciples. Can I tell you a story? It was in Amsterdam. I've never forgot this. I've never seen Prabhupada like this. We were trying to install Lord Jagannath. Prabhupada had come for a whole week and he gave lectures. And that morning of the day, which is the day all his disciples will remember until the last day, he was seeing that the preparations were not really going well and we were not so competent. Prabhupada was highly invested. There was TV coming in the afternoon for the installation of Lord Jagannath, Baladev Subhadra Devi in Amsterdam. It was a very important thing, but things were not coming together because we were disunited and we were just too many in a small place and there was not one central organizational group. It was not like the Pandava Senas is very nicely organized, but we were not so much. So in the morning, Prabhupada was already in the mood where he would see the mistakes and correct them. So he sat like this and said to my older brother was sitting like this in the lecture, "Don't sit like this." "Don't sit like this. This is like a bull, you know, a foolish bull, you know." So, yeah. Then the day came, the hour came that the curtain opened, the TV was there, and there on the altar was Jagannath and Subhadra. One important deity was missing. I don't remember, because I was so shocked by Prabhupada's reaction, if it was Baladev who was missing, or if Baladev was there but in Subhadra was missing. The devotees had made an altar, but they had forgotten it's for three deities, not for two, like Gornitai or Radha and Krishna. Jagannath, Baladev and Subhadra. It was short. The altar was short for one divinity who was I don't know where they put the deity. They were also a little over challenged. You know, when you make mistakes and then your spiritual master's on your case, then you tremble with nervousness. So I still remember Prabhupada was on the Vyasasan, that it was live transmission on TV. And Prabhupada was just saying, "You incompetent people." Prabhupada never used strong words. I mean, his mood was strong, but he was very, very cultured. And he chastised all of us. "Don't ask me what he said, because what I did is I just ran into the kitchen and hid in the kitchen. I didn't want that he looks at me, and I was hiding. I remember behind these massive pots, and I was just on the floor. And I thought, I stay here until the war is over. It was intense. It was so intense, and Prabhupada didn't care that the TV was just rolling. It was all on TV. Understand, Prabhupada was not thinking of pleasing the crowd. He was thinking to please Krishna. It was not possible that an altar had been made keeping one deity in the storage, or I don't know where they put the deity. And I thought, he's so glorious. He thinks of Krishna. He's not a crowd pleaser. And that made him so powerful. That made him so endearing to Krishna, that bhakti. And so it was really, I don't know what happened. I heard it was heavy, but I was lying in the kitchen floor. I don't know. I was just, when Prabhupada, we must understand, he was, is the most energetic, charismatic person you can imagine, and at the same time, the most humble. And here, humble is the most soft person. After the day was over, the devotees brought him to his place. He had a room, and Prabhupada had not eaten the whole day. A plate of prasadam, his prasadam, was on the back seat. Then the driver, because we all were so super nervous, was driving, but then he had to hit the brakes, and the whole plate, samosas, kachoris, dal, sabji, two sabjis, sweet rice, everything was sailing off the seat and bang, falling on the floor, and it was unretrievable, lost. This was Prabhupada's only prasadam for the whole day. The noise was there, it was clear, the prasadam had been sailing through the car, fallen on the car. Prabhupada looked at it and was totally undisturbed. The devotees told me there was not even a bend in his mood, not even a small bend in his mood. He just didn't even speak about it any longer. There was nothing to be done. And this showed all of us, and we spoke about this a long time. Prabhupada only cared for Krishna, not for his, not even the slightest bit for his eating or whatever it is that an individual might need in this world. So he is that devotee who really had a lot of, attachment to Krishna. I can really say like this. I wanted to give this, I think, as an example. I must say, this Pandavasena retreat is ecstatic, but a lot of things are happening for me, so just now it's on the subject of doing things with the mood. Was I answering a question, maybe? Who? So Neil, whatever your question was, this is my answer. We have to be honest, no? We are in the family. Hare Krishna. If it's not fully answered, we can afterwards, yes. So I promise to be now totally focused. Who else is there? Yes, Amartati is there.
father of Rupa Bhakti is spontaneous, loving, affection and devotion for Krishna. And from that, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that that's it, the root of the gopis of Vrindavan. So how can we practically understand our Rupa Bhakti in our practical lives? Because we cannot imitate the
gopis. Exalted levels, yeah, yeah. No, it has not, it's not a question of spontaneous devotional service or service done under the orders of Guru and Shastra. It is obviously on a higher level, it plays into this Vaishnav philosophy, but on our level, it is the third point of Rupa Goswami's definition of what bhakti is, and any type of bhakti, the beginners and the more advanced. It must be done for Krishna. Anush Krishna Anushilanam must be there. Then it is done with body, mind and words. That's the chesta, that's the activity, the endeavor. And then it must be done with a favorable intention to please Krishna. And that is the Bhava Rupa Bhakti. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but your point is very nicely taken. The verses, one of the verses thing which we are always warned of is kalpana, or imagination, imagining ourselves into something. Because with imagination, really you anticipate the real thing, but you can't get it because you're on the wrong path. You're on the path of your imagination. Imagination leads us away from the real experience of bhakti. So this is not about imagining ourselves into a situation of devotional feelings. It's just reminding us that what we are doing is done for Krishna's pleasure. And from there you will go, obviously you will start on a accessible level, and then you will develop more and more. Mm-hmm. Yes, we. Mataji, I'm so happy to see you, because I know you and your husband and your children. Please, Vrindavan, isn't it something with Vrindavan? Vrinda Kishori, yeah, Hare Krishna, Vrinda Kishori.
I had a question from yesterday. So mm-hmm. About, mm-hmm. And seeing that, because we're chanting, we're always asking Krishna, please engage in devotional service. And the problem I sometimes encounter myself is that, I'm asking Krishna, please engage in devotional service. Then I get a service opportunity and I say yes. And I'm really grateful, thank you, Krishna. And then another service opportunity comes up. And I say yes, thank you, I'm really grateful. And another service opportunity comes up, and I'm exhausted, and there's so much coming on. And then I don't want to say no, because I don't want to seem ungrateful to Krishna. So I say yes, and I get to the point where I'm completely exhausted, and then I'm still given more opportunities to Krishna. At the moment, I'm still, I'm saying yes, and then even when I say no, I'm like, I feel really bad, I feel really ungrateful, and I'm saying, I know Krishna, I'm asking to, for me to be engaged in devotional service. I'm really tired right now. So with that going on, and internally, we're trying to move from the mode of passion up to the mode of goodness. How do we kind of balance it all?
Yeah, Vrinda Kishori is from the old generation of devotees. Yes, we You all know this. And because of this, Vrinda Kishori, much of the older generation became so exhausted that after being in that spirit of accepting, they have now gone totally to the other extreme of just taking care of themselves, from mission to me, so to say. I can only say there were times which came to our awareness. I would like to answer these questions, meditating how Prabhupada would answer them. The devotees came into this exhaustion phase where they really felt depleted of their energies. And then Prabhupada, he wrote this one letter, and it's often quoted. He said, no, you must know, on the first place is health. It must have been a devotee who had become unhealthy. The second place is sadhana, and the third place is service. I don't think it would be right to quote this letter, which was obviously written to a devotee who was unhealthy, as a general guideline. First is health, then for all devotees and all times. No, no. But I think we have to understand this letter was balancing it. I had a wake-up call when I had visited Persia. It was a place where Srila Prabhupada had preached. And I had visited that there was this day where in all over Persia, due to some religious reason, religious in these citation marks, they were slaughtering everywhere sheep. It was really the blood festival, almost like maybe like in India we find people slaughtering to please Mother Durga with that notion. So, but mass slaughter. And Prabhupada had been there on that day, and he said on that day the devotee should perform sankirtan from morning till evening. And so we did this. We had a very nice friend of Krishna who was very rich and could supply a secure venue, and we had a long kirtan. And the next day, I remember, I went into the park where Prabhupada had made his morning walks while being in Tehran, the capital town of Persia. And we had taken the transcriptions of his morning walks with us because we felt we are in the park. Let's see what Prabhupada said here. Now by modern technology it is available. We can find out this and such date, morning walk, such and such park in Tehran. So you can sit there. It was many, many years ago, but it was the day after that slaughter day where he made the walk. We were sitting on the same day in the park, and Prabhupada, to my great surprise, said, this human body is like a tree. It is not that we say, neglect the body. No, take care of the body so that you can get the fruits of self-realization. And then he said how we take care of a good fruit tree. We understand. We give water and maybe manure so that the good tree can give succulent fruits, quinces maybe, or apples or mangoes. So in much the same way, we do take care of the body, because at this moment it is our sadhana sharira, our vehicle to do sadhana, but it's also our seva sharira, our vehicle for doing service. This dealing with the material energy is called Yukta Vairagya. It's a valid philosophical point. You renounce the body as a means for sense gratification, but you engage it in connection with the service of Krishna, yukta, so that it can help you in self-realization, like chanting. And I always feel like this when I lead kirtan, Vrinda Kishori, and then I realize if I have done my yoga, I can jump longer than all these young people. But if I have not done my yoga, I will have neck pain and back pain and throat pain and so on. So I will continue my yoga so that I can lead kirtans and dance also next to Nitai Kirtan and see who will last longer. Hare Krishna. So Yukta Vairagya, that is, in that spirit we can take care of the body and so on. Yeah, but I know when there is good service opportunity and it comes, this shows your nice heart that you don't want to say, no, I don't want to do this. Well, we do not ask ladies how old they are, at least not in Germany. No need, it is not to be revealed in public. Men can reveal, but ladies, I heard, it's not polite to ask. But maybe you are still so young that you don't need sleep, but so you can. My take on this is always, I will do extra service. I will also fast and not eat prasadam if there is service, but to a certain degree. And when I go over the border, I know this is now the time. I would say, sorry, now is I have to close my shop at now for come back after 2 hours or 3 hours. Like this, I would say, like this. Yeah, it's good to do austerities. You become so purified by austerities. It's such an opportunity to purify the mind and the heart. You just have to see how far can you push over the border, and when do you have to be polite and say, I need to close my shop. Hare Krishna, but wonderful to hear you. And here we are seeing a proper theater play this evening, I believe. Let me just see. Oh, Krishna, time is racing by. One or two more questions is permitted. Good. Any other? Devi Kumari?
So the verse that you quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.36, it speaks about in accordance with a particular nature.
Yeah.
So my question is from two perspectives, one of a new devotee, somebody very new to Krishna consciousness, and an experienced devotee. So how important is it to engage your nature? Because at certain points there may not be a particular service available that engages your nature.
Yeah.
Or... yeah, so there may not be anything available, or you may not know your particular nature or what service would suit you. So is the higher principle to just engage in whatever service is available, because sometimes you need to do the needful, or is it that you should, because you wouldn't want to deter a new person and make them do something that they don't
know. Yeah, yeah. In general, we always hear we should be engaged according to our psychophysical nature. It means our physical nature. Matajis have different services than men, and also our psychology, the way we think and perceive and feel. That is good. But then there are these opportunities where you are clearly called to perform outside the limited range of your conditioned nature. And that may be during a Jamashtami festival, when by normal standards you would be in bed at 12 o'clock, But here is still such service to be done that you will say, no, let me surrender and do something. There is this, our natures. And with our nature come also our talents, and with our talents come something like which we can call our particular service in Krishna consciousness. And it's good that you can find your fingerprint in devotional service. Fingerprint, this is an expression which refers to each as a person, as an individual. Did you know that this particular fingerprint of, let us say, Gaur Krishna's fingerprint is unique? There is no second fingerprint exactly like the one which Gaur Krishna will make on the piece of paper. So we all have something unique which we should offer to Krishna. And generally, to find this unique thing, our spiritual master helps us, the devotees help us, and then we are engaging that because we are best in that. However, Devi Kumari, when there is a situation which requires surrender or all hands on deck, you say like this in English, I've learned this new word from Abhishek the other day, all hands need to come on deck, then we will not hide our hands in our apron, but we will do that service, although it is not what we would do on a daily basis. Looking in your face, I can see I didn't hit the question totally. I will think more about it. Hare Krishna. So, yeah. Here is our professor, our devotee. What is your good name again? Kishan. Kishan, the famous Kishan. Yes, yes. Last question goes to the famous. Oh, sorry, I don't want to inconvenience you, but I heard so many good things about you, and I wondered who is Kishan. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the really nice class again. Maharaj, my question is on the quote by Bhaktivinoda Maharaj that you gave.
Yeah.
And the quote was, when you desire to serve beyond your capacity, yet you act without hesitation, this is the moment where empowerment takes place. So my question is in relation to acting without hesitation and kind of developing that fearlessness, where does that come from? Because sometimes I kind of reflect on my own life, we kind of get so absorbed in our own anarthas and our limitations that we forget maybe the Krishna factor that kind of overrides.
It's definitely a high level of performance which this quote calls us to. Definitely. Where do we get that fearlessness from? I know what I want to say, but I have to put it into words. Kishan, I will answer it again from experience. And I think there is a value when older devotees who have been who had different experience in devotional service share this. I remember a time in Germany when we didn't have any books, and we were at that time to maintain the temple all taking work, outside work. And a letter came to Prabhupada describing that to maintain the temple there was one devotee who only had found an engagement as a dishwasher. And he wrote back to us in Germany and said, I don't want my brahmanas to be dishwashers. Print books and distribute them. So we did this. We translated quickly the Ishopanishad, printed it, and then found ourselves with book bags on the streets of Hamburg. That was where the first temple was. And I still remember the scary feeling. Never done this. A book. Here's the book and there are the people. That is all what you know. And the book has to go from A, that's you, to B, that's for to the people. And it was very unusual. I mean, for some of us who had, you know, some of us came from social backgrounds where we would not be on the streets offering something. It was not done. It was not conceivable. So anyways, we were doing this. And I remember there came a time for me where I was almost giving up because I couldn't find the right words. How to explain an ancient philosophy to a man who works in the harbor, you know, of Hamburg. And I was not in a good... But I remember I did not wish to give up. And so I distributed. And then there was this... All of a sudden, this old lady came to me and said, I'm looking all over the town for these young people who have the Sri Ishopanishad. I didn't know if this was the devil in disguise or what it meant. And the lady asked innocently, do you know where I can find them? And I asked, why? And the lady said, we have a reading circle in Ahrensburg. Ahrensburg is 35 kilometers from the center of town with other ladies, and we read the Upanishads. Wow, I said, really? How many do you need? Well, I need 35. 35? I fainted. And then I woke up and I said, come with me. I know where to get you 35 Ishopanishads. And I brought her to the place where we had deposited our books, and I packed a whole cartoon, and then I said, but you're an old lady, how will you carry it? I will carry it, I will come with you if you pay me the train ticket. And then I went with her, delivered the books, and yeah, there was an empowerment, there was something working all of a sudden, which came. So Krishna is famously known, Kishan, to wait until his devotees come to that point where they have to decide, where do I take shelter now? And when you take shelter at Krishna, and not in Maya's kingdom, then he's usually convinced. You are a tried and tested devotee. A tried and tested devotee. Hare Krishna. Good. So, what do the Kaviraj brothers... No, thank you. It enhances the experience very much when we hear from you.
Yes, and Yaj is really good, so it just doesn't want to come up, but I'm just a transparent medium. Well, I'm not transparent. That's yeah, kind of. But there is another little summary of how much we could do because it was tough, because there was questions. And so apologies if this one's a bit more incoherent as the other ones. Not that the other ones are so much better. But. So, starting off. Yuvati nam yatha yuni, yunam cha yuvato yatha, mano bhira mate tadvan, mano me ramatam kvayi. As the minds of young girls take pleasure in thinking of a young boy, And those of young boys take pleasure in thinking of a young girl. May my mind take pleasure in you, Krishna. What we sometimes, I don't like that. What we sometimes fail to see is that Krishna is pleased with even a small bit of bhakti. He cares more that we perform service with devotion, with our body, our mind, our soul, and our emotion. As Prabhupada said, it's not about becoming a crowd pleaser, but making Krishna happy as a spiritual seeker. Ultimately, we want to get to a stage where we're lost in the thoughts of bhakti. That's what we really want to do. So forget about what people think of you, become a chanter, a reader, a dancer, and sometimes even forget that you're responding to a question and answer. And if we do, we will begin to see, just as Kaliya, Krishna will dance within our heads and our hearts. And if we accept his mercy with genuine humility, we can finally be in complete ecstasy. And if you think that you're a car that's jolting, remember to get your MOT. So here's a few checks that we can do before we start our car journey. Remember to check if you are fueled with determination, with words from the sadhu on the radio as a healthy dose of inspiration. And be sure to be strapped in, because this KC life isn't a smooth ride. But always remember, we know not where we're going, for the roads will decide. It's not just the destination, it's the glory of the ride. And one last thing for us all to take away, where there's Krishna's wheel, there's always a way. So as you can see, the puns were getting more and more because Yajin is slowly overpowering me. So every pun, he's like, this is more car puns. Especially where there's a wheel, there's a way. He was so excited. But thank you, Raj, for giving us so much time with your sessions and with your question and answers. Now I have